we welcome into the program our friend, sportscaster, radio, TV host, author, actor, writer. He does it all. The multi-hyphenate Gary Tangway. Hello, Gary.
Yeah, right now I'm just running around trying to pick up after my kids. And how clean is your son's bedroom?
Oh, God. Well, clean, it's clean, but it looks like a hurricane blew through.
My son and I were away. He's doing a college thing, and we're going to different colleges and stuff. So we shot. He has a fan in his room, and he has this fan going all year round. And I always wondered why. You know, he says, I get hot at night. We shut the fan off, and you would have thought that the Sudbury Town dump had all of a sudden just been put on our second floor. Now we understand why. I mean, the cloud that was coming out of that room was unbelievable.
So was the fan blowing the stink, like, out of the room and to other parts of the house?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was sending it in another direction. But we shut the fan off, and we all needed gas masks. It was unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And then I just got a call. He graduated from high school, you know? So, you know, his grandmother sent the check, and she goes, he hasn't cashed the check yet. That was, like, 3 weeks ago. I'm like, do you even know where it is? I'm like,
he's like Ricky Henderson. It's in a pile somewhere. And, yeah, if he needs it, he'll find it.
Yeah, if he needs it. Yeah, I'm not around for, I'm not going to be the check forever, pal. You got to keep track of your own stuff. So when you read all of those positions or descriptions of me, I can only laugh because today I was none of them.
Well, my son is 9, so he has not reached that point in young boy development where they begin to take on that peculiar aroma. But I know that maybe within the year it's going to happen, and I'm preparing myself for that.
And then, like, if he's, I assume, like, does he like sports?
Oh, yeah. He's at soccer camp this week.
Yeah, okay. So then that soccer bag comes home when he's, like, 15, and he opens it up, and, like, everybody passes out. And he's just like,
well, yeah. Listen, Dad, I remember your sneakers back in the day, so he might come by it naturally.
I was a slob. I mean, I remember you. You were a neat freak, you know, but I was, like, a fraternity house slob, so, like, he doesn't take it from the ground up. I mean, this is payback. But he's worse than Oliver was. I mean, Mike Maroney, vice president of DU fraternity, said, Tangway loves his clothes so much he sleeps with them. There was one time I had laundry on the bed, and it just never made it off the bed. It was like, I'm going, you know, it just becomes part of the bed. And, you know, and then you just pull off what you need. Some socks, you know.
See, what I don't understand is this, because we've got just one, and he has taken over, I would say, roughly 80% of the house. His stuff is everywhere. How did you survive when you had three of them in the house?
Well, it's because this generation is, we're afraid of our kids. It's like we want our kids to love them, to love us, as opposed to fear us. Like, you know, there was a generation probably, I guess, around, like, when we were kids, maybe a little before. You know, parents feared, you know, now. And then it came and swapped, and, like, everybody's going to be huggy and gentle and all that. And, you know, everybody's involved. And now it's, like, gone to the other side where, like, I feel like the maitre d' of my house. Everything okay? You know, like, it's not supposed to work this way. You know, that's the problem. So, yeah, you let them take over the house because that's just the way we are now as parents. And, like, I mean, wait till they are. Dude, I got one graduating from college. I got another. I'm scared to death of them leaving. Wait till you get to that point. Then you're like, God, that's, you know.
No, that's 9 years away, though. There's a pretty good chance in 9 years I won't even remember I have a kid.
Well, if he's lucky. Yeah, you might be.
Why do I have a son? Dad. Where are you? Hey,
yeah. Well, you waited long enough. But yeah, it's something, man. I mean, they are, it's another thing. We digress. I mean, I don't know. I was having this conversation with a coach. This I do think people will find interesting. The coaching style, we're talking about coaching kids. And what I've learned is, like, the coaches I had in junior high and high school, they would call you every name in the book. I mean, I was never fast, but I had a coach. I was called everything. When you're running, the wake-ups and suicides, I mean, they would just, if you called a student, you know, as a coach, or a guidance counselor, if you called a kid anything that like we were called in our practices, oh, you'd be sued. You'd be thrown out of the building, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I mean, just like, you know, Tangway, you piece of blah, 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 you're a pig, you know, on and on. But today's kids, they'd just walk off the field.
Right.
They just go, I don't need this. They wouldn't cry to anybody. So I noticed, because I was talking about this, my daughter's playing lacrosse, and she's 12, and we were talking about different coaches, and a coach in our town won the state championship, and her style is very, accountability is key. If you don't play hard and don't play well, you don't play. But she doesn't really yell and scream. It's like, you know, my son had a coach once. He just said, if you don't play defense, you will sit on the bench. And that was it. And he went out and played defense. So it's kind of like, you know, you yell and scream at kids. They don't really listen to you anymore.
No, and it's the same in the classroom, too. I mean, they'll tune you out if all you're doing is yelling. I found in the last few years, it's much more effective to get really quiet. That scares them. Because they don't have much quiet in their world these days.
No, they don't. Well, that's true. They don't. And accountability. If you do X, Y will happen, and hold it to them.
And consistency, too. But don't you think, though, I mean, I think we see parallels with modern professional sports where
the coaches
are no longer in charge. It's the millionaire players that run the show.
There's no question. There's too many options for our kids and the athletes. For example, you know, you had three sports that you could play growing up or you were in band. Now there are so many different avenues that a kid, a young man or a young woman can keep themselves occupied that if they don't like the way somebody's treating them, they'll just go, I'll go do this. And, you know, good for them. So it's the same thing with professional athletes. They have the power, but you need to motivate them by money and by pride. And that's a whole other kettle of fish. I mean,
I worry about is this, Gary. And I love sports. We grew up loving sports, and you like to see your kids involved in that kind of thing. But I go back to what you said. There are so many options today, and at the lower levels, you get middle school, and they've got B teams and sometimes C teams. And virtually every kid these days, if they want to be, is a three-sport athlete. And what I worry about is when they put all of that time into athletics and don't do other things, what happens to them when they reach that point, whether it's in high school or after high school, when the sports are gone, if that's all they've done for 10 years of their life?
Great debate. It is the money question for parenthood because of the clubs and because of the school. You know, before, you know, you would just play a town game. Like I played for Mexico, whatever. You know, now, you know, my son, who was going to play lacrosse in college, had a town team. He had a club team, you know, and it was all year round. And we go to Long Island, and we go to Maryland, come back and you play a Sudbury game. And then, so what time is there for other things where you and I are both big advocates of the arts? Where, you know, I've always said, you know, the great thing about growing up in a town like Mexico and Rumford was you didn't have enough kids. So everybody that was playing sports, they were also in the play.
Right.
But we wouldn't have had a play. Which is great. You're absolutely right, Rich, is that they are just exposed to that one thing as opposed to being exposed to other things, sports, but also, you know, the arts and music and culture and cooking and everything. No question.
And I find, too, that with all the opportunities and all the travel sports that exist for younger kids, and yet, I think in every sport, the ability, the level of play, the fundamentals have gone down from a generation ago, even with all those opportunities.
I think so. I guess, that's a very good point, too. What I've seen is the fundamentals have gone down at the municipal level. In other words, take Bangor, take Sudbury, our two towns. You have town teams, right?
Mm.
So we're coaching our teams, and we have 11-year-old kids and 12-year-old kids. And it's very important that everybody participates, and we'll get into this whole debate of everybody gets a trophy, everybody wins, and all that. You know, but what happens is the level of play goes down because there's no accountability and there are no consequences for poor play because everybody has to be included. Now, when you go to a club scene, like my daughter plays for a lacrosse club in Massachusetts, And these and the coaches are the best of the best, and they would make me cry. And they make it very clear that when you enter this program, there is no milk and cookies. You don't play well, you don't play. And I said to my daughter, I go, and she's a fierce competitor. And she's actually, she practices, she loves it. She's a fierce competitor. And she has bought in. But like, she's 11 years old, 12 years old. And I was at a tournament, and they didn't play well in the second game. And I listened to the coach, and this is a legendary coach, and she wasn't mean, but she was just like, we are not going to play that way. If you're going to play that way, if you're going to go out there and put in an effort like that, then you will be on the bench. So you used to get that at the town level, but you don't anymore because everybody has to be included.
Right.
So well, in order to get that, you have to get that at the club level, which I don't have the answer for that. That's just kind of the way it is.
Well, so here's my question. If that's the case, and I think you're absolutely right on that, why are we spending money on high school athletics at this pretty exorbitant rate if the elite athletes are going to go to those private teams, those travel teams, and play for those better coaches, and we've got rec programs for the kids who don't have the ability? The high school experience isn't what it used to be because, again, you're on a travel team, an elite team. You're traveling all over the region, maybe all over the country. How exciting is it for you to come back and, you know, play a game in front of 300 fans at Sudbury or at Bangor High School, for that matter?
You have experienced my life for the last 4 years. you're absolutely right, because lacrosse has always been a wealthy sport. I mean, it just has been. I mean, it was always in the private schools. And now, as you know, it is matriculating through the public schools because kids love it.
Yeah, I think it's the fastest growing high school sport in the Northeast.
Oh, they love kids. I mean, they can put on a helmet and you get sticks and you get pads and it's always moving and you're not waiting for somebody to hit the ball. The problem is money. Is that for high schools, and I'll talk about high school sports in general, not just lacrosse, is you still have some terrific players with great potential that don't have the money to go to the private school or don't have the money, you know, to play in the clubs or, you know, and that's the tough part. So you will get that, but I've seen it in my town where, you know, we decided that, you know, we moved to this town for a reason because of the school system. And my son lost teammates after the 8th grade year because they went to private schools, and you know, the town team wasn't as good with that. And there's something still, I wonder, you know, I don't know because we chose not to do that with our kids. There's still something great about the high school experience for playing for on a high school team, whether it's Friday night football or whether it's, you know, lacrosse or, you know, basketball on a Saturday night. I still got to experience that with my son. But it's an issue, Rich. There's no doubt. The municipalities are there for the people that can't afford it because, I mean, I don't know how people do it. I mean, they'll send a kid to 4 years of private school in high school, and that could be $15,000 a year. It could be $50,000 a year. Then they go to college.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the other thing, too, and we're in the midst of it now, I'm old enough to remember when the summer was summer and when kids could be kids, and then about the only sport that existed in the summer was maybe American Legion baseball, Little League, Senior Little League, whatever. But kids were not playing. They weren't playing summer soccer. They weren't playing summer hockey, summer basketball leagues, unless it was hanging out at an outdoor court. And now, if you are an athlete with any skill level from, I don't know, the age of about 9 or 10 on, you're expected to participate in summer programs.
You are, and that happened with us, with my daughter, who her goal is to play for North Carolina in lacrosse. That's what she said. She's laser focused, and she was going to a summer camp for 7 weeks overnight. And she had to make a decision because with the club she's playing, if you want to play with the elite kids, and that's what she wants to do, she's playing lacrosse all summer. Dude, I'm everywhere. I'm going to Vermont next week. I've been to Maryland. I'm going to Philadelphia, Delaware. I'm going to Queens, New York. This is all for lacrosse.
Wow.
that's what I'm doing.
Hey.
I drove to Albany for a 10-year-old lacrosse game.
Oof.
For three games in a day. And I will tell you this, her club team, the kids are unbelievable. They are unbelievable. And that's, you see the quality of athlete today is because of it. I mean, they're unbelievable. But that's the decision, the child makes. Now, having said that, there's also burnout. I've also seen that too.
Mm.
And that's the big thing for parents that we all have to watch out for is we don't, balance. Got to have balance. It's hard, man.
And you got to remember as a parent too that it's their game, but it's hard not to get invested in it when you're spending the money and spending that time going on the road every weekend somewhere.
Well, I've done that too. Like, I've said, okay, we're doing this. I mean, money. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? We'll be in Baltimore, and I've seen a couple times, my son, he's a couple games, and he took a couple games off. I'm like, hey, kid, we didn't fly down to Baltimore, rent a car, get a hotel for you to sit back and relax. If you don't want to do this, that's fine. But if you got to be all in. You have to know, if you're going to invest this money, the kid's going to be all in. And then, but too, and it's going to college. And I was like, you don't have to play lacrosse in college. And again, it's lacrosse. Nobody's making money off of lacrosse. I said, after 4 years there, bro, you got to get a job,
Uh-oh. Did we lose Gary?
The NBA after 4 years.
Oh, don't move because we lost you for a second there.
Oh, I'm right here. Am I back?
You're back now, back and better than ever. Yeah, we're talking with Gary Tanguay here on Downtown.
Yeah, you got to remember when you play, how many kids actually make it to the professional level,
Right.
And that's, it just doesn't happen,
Talking youth sports here with Gary. No, let's talk a little bit of pro sports. You were telling me in a text that you like what the Celtics have done in this offseason.
Yeah, I do, because it was time for Marcus to move on. Marcus was one of those guys who was very popular because of his enthusiasm, his intensity, his leadership. And the thing that was really too bad is he loved Boston. And not a lot of athletes do. Not a lot of athletes love playing in Boston, and he loved it here. But I think that they went as far as they could with Marcus. The way that they lost in the playoffs is the other team would double team everyone else and let Marcus shoot a three at the end of the game, and he never make it. So you had Marcus Smart taking clutch threes at the end of the game. He had the 14th highest three point shooting percentage on the team. Okay, in the fourth quarter he's taking threes. You can't. It's not going to compute. And he felt that he was in the same level as Tatum and Brown, and he's not. And I think the other two guards are better, quite honestly. But what happens with Boston fans is they love the grit, or New England fans, they love the grit, they love the tenacity, and sometimes they confuse that with talent.
Right.
Marcus was not a great scorer, and he thought he was. And, so they had to make a move. I think Porzingis, who averaged 27 points with Washington, had a much better year with the Wizards. And I got in this argument with Bob Ryan, on our podcast. He said, I don't need a 7'3" guy shooting threes. I said, yeah, but he makes them. Who cares if he's 7'3" or 5'4"? They go in. So, I was listening to the guys down here today, Maz and some of the people that are still following it closely, more closely than I am. There's still a feeling the Celtics may pull something off because Brown isn't signed yet. And I think Jalen's going to want the full double max, and they're not going to give it to him, nor should they. So that shoe may drop where they have to figure out what to do with him, because he should not be paid what Jason Tatum's paid. I mean, you just can't do it. And that's going to be the tough one ahead, But I'll tell you, if Damian Lillard leaves Portland and goes to Miami, it's over. It's over. I mean, unless the Freak's healthy. Then you get Milwaukee and Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think whoever comes out of that wins You know, damn Denver, man. You know, that guy makes basketball look so easy, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, the teams that maybe it was a lesson for the Celtics, the teams that got to the finals maybe didn't have the best overall talent, but they played as a unit and they were unselfish.
It always happens in basketball. You know, Rich, I mean, Michael Jordan didn't start winning until he used the entire team. And what Jerry Krause did, he was exemplary in it, even though he and Jordan hated each other, is he put the perfect pieces around Jordan. You know, I mean, Jordan started passing the ball to John Paxson, you know, and then Steve Kerr, so they could make wide-open jumpers. You know, that's when they started winning championships. I mean, Jordan obviously was the reason, but, you know, that's the stuff that, you know, even when you, you know, you can go back down the road in any championship, in any series, in any Super Bowl, there is always some blue-collar player or some guy who's not a star that makes a play, that does something, that helps win the series. Whether it's Cedric Maxwell winning the MVP in 81, and, you know, I thought, you know, Max got hurt. If Max doesn't get hurt, I think he's a Hall of Famer. But all the way down, you know, you have to have these other guys to fill in the gaps. And I think the Celtics started reading their press clippings too early. I think they felt, you know, once they got to the finals, that it was going to be a regular thing, and it's just not. You know, I mean, not if Milwaukee's healthy. If Miami gets Damian Lillard, you know, forget it. And Miami, you know, it's hard as a Celtic fan to root for Pat Riley. But you have to admire what Miami did. I mean, Rich, I'm with you. I mean, guts. You know, I mean, the Celtics had more talent, but Miami had more guts. They worked hard. They wanted it more.
We're talking with Gary Tanguay. We got to talk a little television. Why should people, if they haven't yet, start watching The Bear?
It is the best show I've seen in years, but I keep saying that about every show that I see every now and then. You know, there's so much great stuff on streaming. I mean, it just really is. Like Ted Lasso, the first season, I was like, this is the best show ever. Then The Bear comes out, and I'm like, this is the best show ever. It's just great. And there's something very romantic about cooking back into the house, and it's all about food and the preparation of food and the artwork of food, and that's why people love all these cooking shows. I mean, you cook, right?
Oh yeah, and I love cooking shows.
Yeah, I mean, everybody loves cooking shows, you know, and they love the whole the idea of the, you know, I mean, like Anthony Bourdain's book, you know, Kitchen Confidential. People love that book, and I love that book. And that's what it's about. And have you watched any of it yet?
I've seen season one. I have not seen season two. I've heard is that I've heard Jamie Lee Curtis is incredible.
You know, you and I both love acting. We both love to act. We love to talk about it. This woman has had such an exemplary career. And then you see her in Knives Out, you know, with the gray hair and, you know, playing, and she was great. And you just see her pop. I didn't see Halloween, but I've heard she was fantastic.
Well, and then Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Rich. I just brain cramped. Yes, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yes. You know, prior to that, it was like she was hanging off a helicopter with Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know. And I've always been a big fan of hers anyways. I just think, you know, I think she's awesome. In this show, I mean, it just goes to show, if, like, you're getting older, you're getting better. She is unbelievable, Rich. She plays Carmy's mom.
Yeah.
She is unbelievable. And there are so many opportunities for there to be some overacting. She nails it, man. She walks the fine line. I mean, you know, if you're playing an addict or someone who's violent or have these explosive personalities, it's such a fine line to walk from being realistic to being a caricature. And she just nails it. She's unreal. Like, I never thought of her like I always thought of her as a movie star. I never thought of her as one of our great actors. Now I do. She's unbelievable. Episode 6, all I know is when you get to episode 6, it's a flashback to a family Christmas dinner. Holy cow.
All right.
Everybody's in it. I'm not going to get all everybody loves all of these stars that you don't know show up. I mean, big names show up in second, like, and they were just fans of the show. I mean, you know, they're working for scale or whatever. Oh my God. I didn't know this, but the baker, I forgot the actor. He's a real baker.
Oh, really?
He's a real bakery chef.
Wow.
Yeah, and the fix-it guy, the fix-it guy, he's an actual chef. The guy that, you know, he's always like fixing stuff.
Right.
He's the cooking consultant of the show. And they also have him playing like the tool man.
I love it.
But like, folks, do yourself a favor. You got to watch it.
And when's your next on-screen performance?
Well, the collaboration is coming out at some point, I guess. I don't know when. And then, of course, with the SAG strike looming, everything has been kind of on hold. You know, I've had one possibility come up that I really got my fingers crossed on, but I'm waiting to see what happens with this work stoppage, which is very important. It's, you know, I'm not going to get into it because I'm not smart enough, but I'm smart enough to know it's a very important moment for the writers and for the actors.
Absolutely.
Very important.
Gary, always good to talk with you. Appreciate you making time for us this afternoon. Good luck with your various lacrosse travels and with keeping that room as a safe a place for the rest of the family as possible.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, Richie, talk to you soon.
See you, Gary. Gary Tangway with us here on Downtown.